This video is brought to you by Holocasa. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description. Hello and welcome everyone to our 122nd session of Holocasa. My name is Michael and today I'm talking to Timothy Lyons from Indiola, New York. Timothy has been in the real estate industry for various years and is now the owner of Cityside Capital. Tim holds also the Series 82 and 63 licenses focused on raising capital for multifamily, self-storage and industrial assets that provide great risk-adjusted returns, tax advantages, passive income and equity upside across the USA. Timothy, I'm super pumped to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your insights from about real estate and also happy to have you from Mineola. You're the first person I have from actually that close to Long Island. Introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, Michael, thank you for having me as a guest on your show. Super happy to be here. So yeah, I mean, I'm born and raised in New York. I don't know if you could hear it in the accent at all, but as a New Yorker, I appreciate talking to people that actually know where Mineola is. So I was, give yourself some props for that. So not, people don't always know exactly where that is, but happy to be here.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Well, I did my little bit of research, so I definitely didn't know that before. First and foremost, give me an overview of Mineola. Give maybe also the international audience an overview of Mineola.
So I'm sure everybody's familiar with New York City, right? They could all probably pick it out on a map. What people don't always know is that it's comprised of five counties, also known as boroughs, right? So there's five boroughs of New York City: Staten Island, Manhattan, Bronx, Queens, and who did I leave out? Oh, Brooklyn. How could I leave out Brooklyn? So Brooklyn and Queens are actually on Long Island, right? They're the totally western part of the island. So as you're traveling east on Long Island, you have Brooklyn, Queens, and then you got something called Nassau County. And Mineola, where I grew up and born and raised, is right in the middle of Nassau County. And then out, heading east furthermore, you have Suffolk County, where like the Hamptons are. I'm sure people have heard of maybe the Hamptons and all the glitz and the glam and all the celebrities out there. So that's where I grew up. And really, it's a probably, I'd call it an urban suburban area, right? So, very densely packed private dwellings, single family houses. My house that I grew up in was on a 40 foot by 100 foot plot of land, and if you open up your window in the summertime, you could almost touch the house kind of next door to you, right? So, but it was great. I mean, a lot of the towns out on Long Island are served by the local railroad system, which can bring you as far out onto the island as you need to go. But it also, it's very popular for people who work in New York City to hop on the commuter rail and head in. So that's what my dad did for about 40 years. That's kind of like Long Island in a nutshell. It was a great place to grow up. It's a lot of people who used to grow, who were from the city back in the early 1900s, and they would settle a little further out, a little further out, a little further out, over the years. So, that's New York in a nutshell.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I would like to jump directly into your business because I think it's super interesting. And you're also a podcast host and you provide a lot of interesting content to the audience. Give us an overview of all the services you're offering to the audience and your value add to society.
Michael, deep down, people want to be real estate investors, right? They either dream about it, they go on Zillow sometimes, they're sitting on the couch and they're like, man, I either saw something on TV and that guy's a real estate investor, or, I met somebody that seems to have a lot of money and they're a real estate investor and I should be doing it too. But they run into a brick wall very quickly that they don't know where to start. They don't know what to do. They don't know the process. They don't know the markets. They don't know how to be a landlord. Maybe they're handy. Maybe they're not handy. Maybe they have a ton of kids and a great career. And they say to themselves, well, you know what? That was a great idea for 5 minutes, but I just simply don't have the time to commit to being a real estate investor. And then they move on. Right. I mean, raise your hand if I just described you, because that was me for a really long time. Right. Because it's just one of those things. It's like, it's like anything in life. If you want to have a nice body and you want to be healthy, you look at the gym memberships online and, you know, you think to yourself, man, I could probably do that 5 times a week, right? But then maybe you run into a brick wall. So it's the same thing. So my company, Cityside Capital, it's me and my brother, Greg. He's older than me by 4 years. He lives down in Charlottesville, Virginia. And we kind of had to solve our own problem, Michael, right? I'm a New York City firefighter. That's what I do full time. I'm a lieutenant in the borough of Queens. Before I was a lieutenant, I did 10 years in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. I was an ER nurse for about 10 years. That was my side hustle at the time. But then I had 3 girls. And when they were little, they didn't know that I wasn't around that much because I was working so much, right? But when they got older, oh my goodness, I felt it. My wife felt it. The girls felt it. So I needed something with passive income, right? And if you type in passive income into Google, you probably come up with a ton of ideas, right? And how do you know which ones are good for you? How do you know what a passive real estate investment is? And that's where I created my company after a lot of trial and error and being a landlord myself, realizing that I hated being a landlord. Even though I'm a firefighter, I should be good with tools, Michael, but I'm not. I'm not very handy. I don't have the know-how or the skills or even the temperament or the patience to hang sheetrock and tape walls and, you know, hang doors and fix window frames. Like, that's just not me. But what I like to do is talk to people, educate them about real estate. So I built a capital raising business that basically provides opportunities to people who want to be passive or what's called a limited partner in big commercial real estate opportunities. And we're talking 200, 300, 400 unit apartment communities across the United States. We're talking about self-storage facilities that have some kind of value add component to it. And more recently, we've gotten into industrial flex space. That is a cash flow play with, you know, hopefully some appreciation on the back end, right? So, I mean, those are the areas now that we really help clients understand what's available to them outside of the Wall Street, you know, some people call it the Wall Street casino, you know. So there's opportunities out there. I didn't come up with real estate, Michael. I just learned the rules. And now I'm just basically telling other people what those rules and roadmaps look like.
How was the beginning, the first purchase?
So I got started with a 3-family property, a 3-unit apartment building, which is, you know, 1 to 4 units in the United States. Qualifies for what's called conventional financing. So you can go to the bank or a mortgage broker and you qualify for the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, right? And each person can get up to 10 mortgages, or it used to be 10. I think it is still 10. So like you can get 10, your wife could get 10, and, you know, then you can start doing LLC, you know, type mortgages, right? But that's a different product. So I said to myself, all right, you know, let me start with a 3-family. And I needed 2 units to be rented out to cover all the expenses. And the 3rd unit was going to be the profit. And to me, I'm a risk averse, kind of cheap guy, you know, just the way I grew up. I didn't grow up with a lot of money. You know, I don't know. 3 units made sense to me. And it was an hour and a half from my house, because in New York City or Long Island or the counties surrounding it, it's very hard. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very hard to cash flow. And there's a high barrier to entry, because even if they do cash flow, you have to come up with a really big down payment, right? So I went a little outside of the, you know, metropolitan area, and I found this bedroom community that's near a town called New Haven, Connecticut. So an hour and a half from my house. I did it with a friend, right? Because I was nervous to do it by myself. I didn't have all the knowledge, the know-how. He was a little bit more handy than I was, although not that much. So that was my first purchase, and I'd be happy to dive in further.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very interesting, because I think on the one hand, it's very, very impressive what you have built. But I believe, like, getting yourself, your hands dirty, and having this, let's say, leap of faith to say, okay, I'm going to go, and still also understanding that it's for people who are more risk averse. So you went for this purchase, you had a down payment, and you had like an interest rate. How much was it? Like 6%, 4% there. I don't know when you bought it.
So I bought this back in 2019, obviously before COVID, before the run-up in prices. And I bought this property. It was $276,000. It was on the market for $315,000. We offered $270,000. We settled on $276,000. We were risk averse. We didn't know exactly what we were doing, but we were going to fail forward, right, Michael? And we ended up buying it through an LLC, you know, because we just figured, hey, you know, like, let's get some asset protection in there. This is what we, you know, read in some of the books. This is what I heard on podcasts. And I said, yeah, that sounds good, right? The problem, if you buy it through an LLC, you don't buy it through your name, you know, in your personal name, is that you don't qualify for that 30-year fixed mortgage. You know, you now qualify for what's called a commercial mortgage. So if you go to the bank, they're not going to underwrite the property and you, they're going to underwrite the property and your entity. And since our entity had no assets, right, it was brand new, we got a 10-year, we had a 10-year loan with a 25-year amortization, 20% down, and our interest rate was 4.5%. And at the time...
Okay. Yeah, that's okay for not having any credit score, let's say.
Oh, yeah. That was great, you know, because if I did it in my own name, I probably would have had a three handle on that 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So we're talking maybe 100 basis points more. So at the time, I was like, man, I don't know. But, you know, the property still cash flowed really, really nicely, right? So even with a 25-year amortization, not a 30-year amortization. So we felt good, right? We were each putting between, I don't know, $400 and probably $600 a month in our pocket. We put a new roof on, we hired somebody to put a new roof on. We hired a company to do the, new exterior siding. And we actually did renovate and got our hands dirty on the first floor unit, upon takeover. So, with all that being said, that was the experiential piece of the puzzle that I wanted to have. I wanted to be a landlord. I wanted to know what it was to collect the rent, sign documents, take care of problems, you know, mow the lawn, shovel the snow. I wanted to have that, but it got old really, really quickly. So that's when I knew that I was not going to buy, you know, 4, 5, 10 of these things. I really wanted to just explore, you know, multifamily, which is defined in the US as 5 units or more. I wanted to explore self-storage. I wanted to explore commercial real estate.
So you said it's boring to have something proximate to where you live. You just go all over across the USA because it's just the more remote you go, the more challenges it is to manage, I assume. Fast forward now, where are you at right now for the audience?
Yeah. So I would say, where are we? About four plus years later. We now have a team. We have several teams across the United States. We have partners across the United States. So we are the equity source for their deals, or one of the equity sources for their deals. So that's how we invest in these opportunities. And, you know, so we have over $1.5 billion by transaction volume for multifamily and self-storage. We could probably update those numbers, and we have somewhere in the range of, say, 6,700 multifamily apartment units that we've now partnered on, which is incredible to say it out loud like this, Michael. Like, when I say that out loud, I almost have to pinch myself and say, am I really talking about myself here? Because, you know, 4 short years ago, I didn't think I'd be anywhere near where we are today.
It does sound surreal, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, I'm European. I know the cash flow in the US is you can generate a lot of much more cash flow in the US. I know that. But still, how did that work? How did you make? I mean, we're only talking like about one family, you know, one unit with 3 tenants, and you talk about maybe 600 cash flow, 800 cash flow, and you still have to have cash flow out. You are married and have children. You have a life apart from that. How did you leverage? I think it's a lot. Most of it is obviously like about leverage. How did you leverage it to this level?
So if you think about it, you know, some of our companies, some of the companies that we partner with on the acquisition side and the property management side, this is what they do full time, right? So when, say, they want to buy a, let's, like, all right, so this week we are raising capital on a 250 plus unit property on the north side of Dallas, Texas. Now, there's going to be, I don't know, $18, $20 million in equity needed to close this transaction for down payment, for CapEx, which is capital expenditures, for renovation costs, for fees, for, you know, everything needed to take a deal down, right? And the company can raise several million dollars by themselves. They've got almost $2 billion of assets, you know, under management. But you know what? They do a lot of deals, right? So they need more equity. So they'll partner with a group like us who can bring several million dollars to the deal. And our platform brought about, I don't know, at least $4.5 million to the deal. And for that, we get compensated because we work with a broker dealer. We get compensated for that equity and we get a carry on the back end. So we get some general partnership stakes in that property. So when you hear $1.5 billion for Cityside Capital, that's not all 100% owned by us. That's us and our partners, you know, teaming up together. So, Michael, if you get any real estate investing book out there, what they're going to talk about is, you know, understanding your why. Why do you want to get involved in real estate? Then they're going to talk to you about mindset and having goals, right? So now you know your why. Now you have your goals. Then they're going to talk about education. You have to know the asset class. You know, do you want to do multifamily or single family? Do you want to do short-term rentals or long-term rentals? You know, does it make sense to do retail? Does it make sense to do office or whatever? So once you have that education piece, now you got to understand the nuts and bolts, the financing, the debt, right? Insurance costs, how to underwrite deals. Then they're going to talk to you about building a team, right? You need an accountant, an attorney, a mortgage person, a broker, you know, property management, asset management, you know, a renovation team. These are every 101 book that you read, whether you're on the active side or the passive side. Those are the types of, you know, stories that you're going to be told in that real estate 101 book. So our story is helping that passive investor understand that journey, understand that we do a lot of due diligence upfront on the operator, on the market, because we're very market specific. Some markets can be block by block, right? Neighborhood by neighborhood. You need to know, am I on the right side of the tracks or the wrong side of the tracks? Can I command the rents that I'm underwriting or can I not command the rents that I'm underwriting? What are the competitors doing? You know, all these different things. How many new units are coming on board? You know, it's called absorption. Can this market absorb all that new inventory and still make money? So, let me throw the ball back to you and see if you want to unpack any of that.
Very interesting. In the end, the entire legal entity regarding LLC also makes total sense. I know that rather from the startup game and the private equity investors having basically like limited partners investing into the LLC in order to then manage it. You have your carry and then you have maybe a portfolio of 10 to 20 to 50 startups and some go bust, many go bust, most go bust, and some are the next rocket ship. You do that for real estate, for multi-tenants. Do you then also have those limited partners, which you maybe also acquire or get through your podcast, through your content? Is that basically the machine in order to understand it correctly?
That's exactly it. You know, I started with, like anybody, Michael, I started with friends and family, college roommates, colleagues, people that knew me, they liked me and they trusted me, right? Same thing with my brother, Greg. But eventually, you know, that goes dry, right? Eventually, yeah, they'll come with you until they, you know, they don't have any more money, right? And, you know, once you have the proof, once I had proof of concept, I wanted to do more, right? Once we started paying them and they had proof of concept, they wanted to do more. And then what happens? You at a cocktail party, you know, you talk about investing or whatever you talk about and say, oh, you know, my best friend Tim is doing this real estate thing and it, you know, pays me every month. You know, oh, really? You know, what's his number? Right. Cool. You know, and then all of a sudden I started being a guest on different podcasts and I started to speak at meetups and, I wrote a chapter in a book, and, you know, I got more active on social media, and, you know, I start to build this, you know, I guess, brand or this persona as Tim the fireman, Tim the ER nurse, you know, your everyday, you know, quote unquote, everyday kind of guy. And it just became a thing, you know, and then I had my own podcast. So, I mean, right now I still feel like I'm getting started, but it's been an incredible ride in the last four and a half years.
Amazing. What do people have to do in order to become partner or limited partner at CitySide?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, if you're an accredited investor, and I can explain what that is to your audience. Accredited investors have the most opportunities out there. They just do. But we also have some room in some of our deals for some what's called the non-accredited but sophisticated investor. And there's really like a test, you know, that you have to take yourself through to say, am I an accredited investor? And it's the following. The first piece to be an accredited investor is if you personally make $200,000US and over the last 2 years, and you expect to make that going forward, accredited investor. If you are married or you filed jointly, I should say, and you and your partner make $300,000 over the last 2 years with the expectation of doing that going forward, accredited. And the third piece is, say you don't have the first two, if you have a net worth of $1 million or more, without counting the equity in your primary home, you are accredited. And there's just another couple ways. If you have your Series 7, if you are have your Series 82, and there's a few other financial licenses, then you could be accredited. And if you don't fall into that, you're not accredited, but you could be non-accredited and sophisticated. And that's where Greg and I have conversations with folks just to see kind of where you are, what you understand, you know, and what's your financial situation. So though we don't make recommendations for, you know, your financial, you know, outlook or future, we need to know that, you know, you are in a good position to come and join us on one of these deals.
So there's still room for those ones who are not accredited, because there's like some gray zone, and you can basically, maybe you have like a vehicle which or a syndicate where you can join.
Yeah. So there's two different types of syndications that we do. One is called a 506B as in boy. So a 506B offering is something where I can't go on social media, I can't go on podcasts, I can't go on YouTube or take a TV or radio spot. I can't market the deal. It has to be somebody that I have a substantive relationship with prior to that deal going live. And because of that, I can take as many non-accredited folks as I want, but I can take up to 35 non-accredited investors into a 506B deal. Now, conversely, 506C, as in Charlie, that is a deal that is only around since, I believe, 2012. And that allows me to market the deal out on social media, however I want to market that deal. But I can only take accredited investors into that offering. So there's a little trade-off there. They tried to democratize, you know, through the Jobs Act of 2012. They tried to democratize access to private equity type offerings. So it just wasn't a good old boys club, or you had to be in certain social circles. And that's how the 506C came to be.
Makes total sense. Okay, perfect. Give us an overview of the investment opportunities you're having right now.
It's challenging right now, right? Because, you know, half of my day is spent defending commercial real estate from the headlines of the news on any given day, right? You know, right now our opportunities are other people's, you know, dogs, right? Because maybe they had floating rate debt and they'd never recap, or maybe they couldn't perform as well as they thought they could. Maybe they bought at the height of the market and there was no more meat on the bone and they're just bleeding money and, you know, they want to get out with their, you know, reputation intact or something like that. So that's where we're seeing a lot of opportunity right now, is people who kind of bought and they didn't, you know, check one of the boxes. And one of the big boxes right now, Michael, is the debt piece, right? Because as little as, you know, 18 months ago, the Federal Reserve was saying, you know, we're not even thinking about thinking about raising rates, right? And everybody, when they heard that, they go, okay, risk on, right? Let's lock up as much, you know, cheap debt as we can. And, you know, not only commercial real estate, but I'm sure, you know, the private equity game, it's a game of basically rolling over debt, you know, over and over and over again, right? And what happened was when the Federal Reserve raised rates to 550 basis points in a matter of, I think, 14 or 15 months, people's financing cost on the commercial side, if they did not buy the insurance policy called a rate cap. So a rate cap, Michael, for your listeners, if you had a deal at, say, 3.5% 18 months ago, we'll call it 24 months ago, and you didn't buy a rate cap because you didn't think, you know, the Federal Reserve was going to raise rates, right? But now you're coming up on that last 12 months, and that's kind of when you need to start thinking about refinancing or selling. Well, selling isn't really a thing right now unless you're in trouble, because the cap rate, what's called the cap rate, or that's one of the ways that we value commercial real estate, the cap rates have gone up, which means values have gone down. And then if the values have gone down, maybe they can't refinance because the net operating income doesn't support the price that they need to refinance at. And that's a huge problem. But even if the NOI, the net operating income, supported a refinance, they went from underwriting a 3.5 interest rate now to like a 6.5. So their interest payment is going to more than double. And that is a killer, right? So that's where we're finding those we're finding deals that are coming to us and our partners off market to try to save these people. But what you can do, what people that we work with, you know, because floating rate debt is not like a death sentence. It's not a terrible product, but you have to use it strategically. You have to know what you're doing. But you can buy what's called a rate cap. So right now, if we get a deal at, say, 4.75 or 5% interest rate, you can buy a rate cap with a strike price of maybe 100 basis points above that. So if you start off with a 5% interest rate and the rates keep on going up and you hit 6, well, now it's capped and the insurance company has to pay the difference.
How much is such an insurance?
Say that again.
How much is such an insurance?
Oh, it depends on the deal. Depends on the state. Depends on the market. Depends on the asset class. But right now, they're expensive, right? Back in, you know, 18 months ago, you can get them for, you know, not a lot of money, right? And it just made sense to have it. Now, because they're in demand, right? And the capital sources are drying up, right? Banks aren't making as many loans, right? The shadow banks aren't making as many loans. You know, they're more expensive. So, but say, you know, that deal, the hypothetical deal I just gave you, maybe that rate cap 18 months ago was 300,000. Now it's 1.2 million.
Okay.
So
is there a space, a market for also multi family units on this one? Because you gave the example, it sounded like a little bit like an individual person. And I don't know if an individual person is, or there's so many individuals being able to afford like a multi-family house in the segment you are buying, in the purchasing price you are buying. So isn't that also, aren't the landlords also rather institutions which should have the cash, or am I wrong there?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, some of our competitors are Blackstone, you know, non-traded REITs, life insurance companies, regular insurance companies, pension funds.
Get distressed.
They can get distressed if they didn't buy it right, if they didn't put the right debt on it, or they didn't execute the business plan right, or, you know, because pension funds aren't in the business of running multifamily units, right? They trust an operator to do that for them, right? They're just a capital source behind it. They want to buy a stream of income for their pension fund or for the life insurance company or whatever. A lot of it is family offices or, you know, companies like ours, right? You know, companies that can aggregate capital to go buy these deals. Now, if you're just doing that because everybody else was doing it and you went to a conference one weekend and you thought you could do multifamily in one of the most challenging environments, you know, that we've known in our current situation, those are the people who are getting, you know, they're getting caught, right? Yeah. So
I understand, especially if you start like when everything at a market situation when everything is blooming, and then suddenly you are finding yourself at an interest rate above 5%, 6%, 8%.
Precisely.
Tell me a little bit about your podcast.
Our podcast. Yeah. It's a labor of love, right? I mean, we dragged our feet. And when I say we, it's me and my older brother, Greg. We dragged our feet for a long time. It was COVID. We were nervous. You know, who wants to hear from us? You know, we're just two schmoes from New York. You know, guys from New York don't do this. You know, all these limiting beliefs, Michael, right? And we finally got over ourselves. And we said, well, why not? Like, why are we not telling our story, right? Because when we tell our story to folks in a small circle, they want to know more, right? If we go to a wedding or something like that, and they're like, oh, Tim and Greg do real estate. Oh, really? And by the time we leave that wedding, we have business cards, we have calls set up for that week, you know, we have, you know, coffee meetings and all the stuff. And we said, well, if we can do that on a small scale, Michael, why wouldn't we start a podcast? Why wouldn't we tell our story? Why wouldn't we have people like Michael on our podcast and sharing their tremendous stories? Because that's how we got started, right? I used to listen to podcasts, Michael, back in 2018, 2019. I'd hear, you know, stay-at-home moms or cops and firefighters and teachers and accountants. And they were buying this real estate and they had families. And I'm like, man, like, if that guy can do it, why can't I do it, right? So if Tim the fireman, Tim the ER nurse can be a general partner in over $1 billion of assets in 4.5 years, why can't I bring other firefighters on that journey who maybe don't want to put their retirement money into Wall Street? They want to get into real estate, but you know, maybe they don't understand real estate like Tim does, you know? So the podcast is called the Passive Income Brothers Podcast, and we just love doing it. I mean, we just recorded a show earlier today, and we just have a lot of fun. He's down in Virginia, so he's 6.5 hours by car, about 49 minutes in the air, direct flight. But we have a great time doing the podcast, sharing our story and our insight. And so far, we've been doing it for just shy of 2 years, and we've gotten a lot of traction from it. Put it that way.
Amazing. Thank you so much for these insights. What do I have to expect regarding the conditions when I'm interested in joining your vehicle, either as a syndicate or along the syndication or as an accredited investor?
So there's a couple of things. You know, it's really understanding, you know, what does being a limited partner mean, right? You're not going to be able to pick out the paint colors or the flooring or the knobs or the fixtures. You're not going to get any say over what color sail shades we put over the pool. You know, it's really kind of, you know, the hardest part of your journey as a limited partner is to vet me, vet the operator that we're working with, vet the asset, vet the market. If you like the market, say Dallas, Texas, if you like multifamily and you believe in that investing thesis behind multifamily, you believe in the operator and their track record, and you know, you're with me and Greg and you understand our diligence process, then this, and you want to be a hands-off investor, then this is for you, right? So it's that plus, you know, are you accredited or not accredited? And we can help you figure that out for sure. And then it's, you know, how do you want to fund this? Do you want to fund this with the cash that you have sitting in the bank? Do you want to fund this with, you know, a whole life insurance policy? Do you want to fund this with a retirement account, right? If you have a self-directed IRA or a solo 401k, you can use those vehicles. But some people don't even know that's available to them, right? And that's a whole different conversation that we have, you know, to unlock some other capital sources that they can now use to invest in these types of offerings. And then, you know, explaining the process, right? All right, this is how it's going to go. So generally, the process goes like this. You're on our email list, right? After we have our phone calls and our onboarding phone calls, you're on our email list. And then we'll say, we have a deal coming out in 2 weeks. So now the deal comes to your inbox. You know, we'll give you the webinar. We'll give you the investor, you know, summary, which is usually 40, 50 pages of a slide deck. We'll give you the subscription documents and the private placement memorandum, which is the legal documents that go through the risks and the benefits and the legal terms and the entity structuring and the capital stack and how everything's laid out and who gets paid what and when, and, you know, all those things. And then, you know, if you go through all those and you like what you see, you like the webinar, you watched it, you went through the investor summary, you liked it. I always, you know, for a first time investor, I always tell them, you know, look, you know, go through it, and then let's hop on a Zoom call and I'll share my screen or you share your screen and let's get your questions answered. Because the worst thing that can ever happen is you invest in something that you don't understand, right? Because then you're on pins and needles or you don't sleep well at night. And that's not what we want, right? We want you to understand what you're doing, understand what the team is like, understand the process, the vehicle, everything. And then if you like it and you raise your hand, you say, Tim, I'm in, you know, 50,000, 100,000, whatever it might be. Then we have you electronically sign the documents, the PPM, which is the private placement memorandum, the subscription documents. And then we have you wire your money to the LLC that was created, the entity that was created to run this property. Then you get an email confirmation once the funds hit. And then we set a closing date. We notify you when, you know, the property's closed. We'll tell you immediately what we're doing upon takeover, whether it's, you know, immediately painting the outside or immediately doing the landscaping or, you know, doing the clubhouse and the renovations for the leasing office. And here's our on-site team. And, you know, you can expect another report from us in 30 days and your first distribution will be in 60 to 90 days, you know, all these things so that we're constantly keeping on top of the communication with the investors, right? And with the team that's on the ground.
Sounds rather like a full-time job than a side hustle. Do you generally have the same amount, or are you asking for the same amount to be invested for simplicity purpose by everyone? Is it a standard document, or do you say, okay, how much would you like to go for? And then you adjust the document accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, we have investors that invest $500,000 at a time. We have investors that do $50,000 at a time. We've had investors execute a 1031 exchange with several million dollars at a time. So it's all depending on, you know, where you are, what you're looking to do, what's your risk tolerance. You know, my dad, for example, is one of our big investors. He likes the, you know, there's a Class A share sometimes that has a 10% coupon, but then you don't get any upside upon sale or refinance. But he likes that income. That makes sense to him every month, 10% on his capital, versus the Class B share, which is a smaller amount of cash flow, but, you know, the potential for upside on the back end in a refinance or even a sale, right? That makes sense for somebody like me, right? I'm only 41 years old. My dad's 73. He's into retirement income. I'm into capital appreciation. So it's understanding the different aspects of the deal and, you know, stuff like that. But for most of our deals, the minimum investment is $50,000. You'll see that is a pretty standard amount in the real estate syndication world. Or the passive investing world. Some people will do 25. Every so often we have a deal that accepts 25,000. But it's because, you know, if you have a million investors at, you know, $1,000, you know, it can become very cumbersome. The reporting, yeah. The taxes, the, you know, K-1 statements, you know, it becomes very cumbersome very quickly. Whereas if you can raise a larger amount of money from fewer investors, there's a more intimate relationship and it just works out better, I think, on both ends.
Makes total sense. When is normally the first payment an investor can expect? Is it after 24 months? Is it after 18 months? Is it about,
how does it work? It's usually 60 to 90 days after takeover. Most of our deals are on a monthly distribution basis. Some of our operators still abide by the quarterly distribution process. So it depends on if we close, say, towards the end of a quarter, you might have to wait until the second quarter goes by, right? So it might be 6 months until you see, but then you'll get the catch up from the end of that quarter that we bought in, the entire next quarter, and then you'll be brought up to speed by that second quarter. Because it takes time, right? Like, we have to come on scene, right? It's almost like being a firefighter. You got to come on scene and you got to assess and you got to do all the stuff. But you got to, you know, implement your accounting. You have to implement your property management, your asset management. It takes a little bit of time to get all those things buttoned up before we start making distributions to investors.
I understand. I'm actually surprised. That's why I asked, because you mentioned it before already. That means you are also buying generally in already cash flow generating properties and not in new projects, which first have to be finished and built or built. It's something which already is attractive because you know the numbers, they are rented. Is my assumption correct there?
Your assumption's correct. Yeah, Greg and I, while we understand the new construction thesis and it makes sense, you know, just for us, it's we started this business for cash flow. And most of our investors are interested in cash flow because, let's be honest, this is not a mainstream way of investing, right? I didn't grow up hearing about real estate syndication. I didn't grow up hearing about 506B and C opportunities. So when we're, you know, I kind of feel like sometimes I'm swimming against the stream or against the tide because, you know, I'm almost defending myself and what we do and how we do it. Meanwhile, it's been around for decades and decades, right? We just don't hear about it. So I like the cash flow portion of it. And right now, to be quite honest, is it makes more sense for me to buy an existing asset that doesn't have a lot of deferred maintenance and to cash flow it and have some sort of value add play to it to force appreciation than to do a ground up development where you got to buy the land, title the land, maybe do some infrastructure spending. You got to get permits approved. And, you know, where are you in the country? Maybe there's a permitting process that's extremely, you know, cumbersome. And then it gets held up and all of a sudden, you know, interest rates go skyrocketing on you and you didn't, you know, anticipate that. And now construction loans are like next to nothing right now. So it's, you know, to me, that's a different class of investor. That's a different class of investment. That's a different thesis. And so right now, you know, we're not getting involved in that.
Makes total sense. Regarding the sourcing of the properties and the deals, how do you do that?
So that's a great question. So because we have our securities licenses, Michael, we have our FINRA Series 82 and our 63, and we are affiliated with what's called a broker dealer. So if you think about a broker dealer in the US, it's like Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Chase, Bank of America, you know, companies like that. The definition of a broker dealer in America is an entity that buys and sells securities on behalf of themselves or their customers, right? But we don't do buying and selling of stocks, bonds, ETFs, currencies, you know, options. We don't do any of that. We vet operators across the United States, people that have track records that are verifiable. We have due diligence firm that we contract with, a third party due diligence firm. We have a compliance officer. We have in-house underwriting team. So we do an incredible amount of due diligence on the front end to qualify the operator. And once we qualify the operator, we invite them onto our platform to take part in our equity pool. A lot of people ask us every day. I get calls at least once a day, emails up the wazoo. Hey, I got a deal. I need 10 million. I need 5 million. I need 2 million. You know, whatever. We don't work like that. We work very hard on the front end to do the heavy lifting to qualify the operator. Depending on, you know, what markets that us and our broker deal want to be a part of. So for example, if we already have, I've been using Dallas today, if we already have somebody in Dallas, so if somebody else comes to us and says, I got all these properties and I have interest in investing in Dallas, well, you know what? We don't want to put too many fish in the same pool because now we're competing against each other, right? So we want to spread out that risk and have operators strategically located in different areas of the country so that now we can have, you know, those opportunities unimpeded by, you know, competition.
And you don't have to have a legal entity in each state in order to do that. You can run it everything via the LLC.
Yeah. So I have to be registered where my investors are investing from. So we have license in, you know, almost all the states between Greg and I. But as far as the operators, yeah, those operators have to take out an LLC, you know, with operating agreements and everything in the state in which they buy the property.
Got it. Makes sense. You're a firefighter, which actually impresses me. I don't know if it impresses me more than your real estate track record, to be super honest, because I have a lot of respect for your work, and I really appreciate that, to be honest. I value it. I don't know the correct word in order to express my my respect towards you. Tell me again, how many years did you do that? Or have you been doing it? Oh, yeah.
I've been doing it for, let's see, almost 18 and a half years. Yep. New York City.
New York City. Let's see. So you were not there during the World Trade Center. Okay, that's like...
No. Thankfully,
you're one of the lucky world. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in college. I went to Providence College, which is in a small state called Rhode Island in New England. And I was a student at the time. But one of the main reasons I became a firefighter was because my Uncle Al was a captain in the New York City Fire Department on 9/11. And he was buried under one of the Twin Towers. Luckily, when he left the firehouse, he grabbed a radio, what he called the super radio, where he could speak directly with the dispatchers. And he was able to tell the dispatchers exactly where he was. And he was actually pulled out alive. One of the few people that day pulled out alive. And he's still with us today. But after that story, I was in college. I was pre-med at the time. And I decided that day that I was going to be a New York City firefighter.
How is it?
It's been the ride of a lifetime. I'm still not done. I still love it. I still have an incredible smile on my face when I have to go to work. You know, they say that if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. I get to podcast on a Monday afternoon with you, Michael. I get to buy real estate. I get to invest. I get to ride on the fire truck. I get to help people. I have an incredible amount of awesome days where I laugh my face off. I do have a couple of handful of days in my career where it's absolutely soul sucking and I feel like crying all day. Those things happen, for sure. But it's been the ride of a lifetime. I love the guys and the girls that I work with. I'll do anything for them. It's a bond like no other. And, I've been blessed and grateful to have been a part of the New York City Fire Department journey.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing this. I think it's amazing what you do. I think it's a wonderful city to be a firefighter to be in, to be honest. I think this must be very exciting. And as you say,
never a dull moment at all.
I guess so. Timothy, I know you're running a little bit, you know, you're a very busy guy, so I don't want to keep you on my show for too long. I really appreciate the entire exchange. You guided me through from your city next to Long Island, basically, to the entire business of yours along the LLC. I really appreciate that you showed us how it works, that you set it up, with also the details of how you bought your first property. I think that was a very nice walkthrough, and then how you started to get your LPs, and you explained us also very well, very, very well, the difference between accredited investors and non-accredited ones, and then you also gave us a very nice overview on the entire process, how someone can invest with you, and also how you generate the leads, or how the leads are coming to you, be it via wedding or via your podcast. You also gave us a lot of nice insights how it works when someone is interested to use your vehicle in order to become a real estate investor and make it really purely passive and to trust you and your entire process. And finally, you gave us some overviews on your markets, on your sourcing strategy, basically competing directly with BlackRock. I think that's not bad. That's that's something which many people still have a life goal or as a life goal. And then finally, I think even almost the most important thing you discussed about and described as your life as a firefighter. And obviously also previously to that, your ER or during that, your ER. So thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. I know there's a puppy waiting for you probably upstairs somewhere, but do you have any final thoughts you would like to share with me?
Well, puppies are great. We just lost our 14-year-old puppy this summer, so we just got a new puppy, and I don't know if you could hear him yipping in the background, but I certainly could. But you know what? I love talking about this. It's something I'm passionate about. And what I always tell people, if they hear me on a podcast, you know, there's no sales in you know, my world. You know, you call me or you email me, we hop on a call, and I'm not getting you to try to sign something and kiss and on the first date, you know, as they say. You know, this is a journey. It was a journey for me. It should be a journey for you. There's a lot of understanding, a lot of education, a lot of action that has to be taken. So, you know, if this hit a nerve or this resonated with you, then, you know, I'd be happy to support you, even if you don't invest with Cityside Capital or, you know, with us or through us. If you just wanted to learn more or understand the pieces of the puzzle, I'm always happy to jump on a call.
Perfect. I will leave your details in the show notes so that people can directly reach out to you.
Awesome.
Timothy, thank you so much. Sending the best regards to New York. And yeah, we talk soon. And thank you so much.
Love
once
it.
Again.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the time.
Bye-bye.
This video is brought to you by Holocaza. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description.